If you ask brands, would you rather have someone who goes viral, you know, occasionally, or would you rather have someone who consistently is going to meet your deadlines, provide quality work, but maybe not have that viral nature? I think most people would choose to work with someone who's reliable and consistent. Consumer trust is really based on who the most authentic voice is. Share the joy of working with your business.
Real quick note, my family and I just got back from an incredible cruise with UnCruise. Now, we'd experienced what cruising was like on a big ship with thousands of people, and frankly, it just wasn't for us. But this one was completely different. It was a small boat of less than 100. We had an amazing time where we saw whales and other wildlife, inspiring nature, hiking, kayaking, and bushwhacking, which is hiking without the trails, and we received incredibly personalized service, guides who get you off the beaten path and gorgeous sunsets. Everything was so easy and with no lines. They provided incredible meals, including sustainable seafood, not to mention a list of impressive cocktails. My wife, daughter, and I loved it. When we returned, I asked UnCruise to become a show sponsor, and I was excited when they agreed. Right now, they're offering special deals on cruises in Baja, Mexico, and Alaska that includes the incredible luxury, service, and adventure that we experience. To learn more, go to benleeds.com/cruise. That's benleeds.com/cruise for the latest deals.
Welcome back to Lead the Team with number one best-selling author and in-demand corporate trainer, Ben Fanning. On this podcast, the world's most innovative senior leaders share their top success strategies to motivate your direct reports, cultivate your top leaders, and accelerate your career. Let's get started. Here's Ben.
Hey, Lead the Team Nation. Welcome back to another episode. Today I have for you Christy Garcia, who is Chief Marketing Officer over at Impact.com. She was named one of the most important marketing executives by Business Insider, and also named as top SaaS executive by Appealee. And over at Impact.com, in case you're not familiar with who they are the world's leading partnership management platform. Their technology platform and partnerships marketplace drives revenue growth for global enterprise brands such as Walmart, Uber, Shopify, Lenovo, L'Oreal, Fanatics, Target, and Levi's. Christy, welcome to Lead the Team.
Thanks, Ben. I'm really excited to be here.
Ooh, here we go. So, yes, you are known for talking about the difference between performance and trust, and you know a thing about that from your background. So what's more important, performance or trust?
It's a great question, and I actually learned that from Simon Sinek. So I think that's how to pronounce his last name. He did a research thing with Navy SEALs, arguably the top performing team on the planet, right? SEAL Team 6.
They're pretty tough.
And he was asking the Navy SEALs, like, how do you choose the guys that are in SEAL Team 6? Like, who makes that? Mm-hmm. And they drew a graph that on one side said performance and the other side said trust on the different axis. And when they said that nobody wants the high performer with low trust, because that person is a toxic leader and team. Everybody wants the high trust, high performance. But if they don't have that, they would rather choose someone who's medium or low performer that has high trust, because ultimately the person with high trust makes people on the team better. And he mentioned, if you go to any team and you say, you know, who's the jerk? Everyone has the one person that they would point to. And if you go to every team and you say, who's the underdog, who's really, you know, the natural leader, who's kind of pushing everyone, and you know they're always going to have your back, they'll all point to the same person. And so they were saying how important it is to look at different measurement. In business, we have all sorts of metrics to judge our performance, right? But we really don't have any metrics to join our trustworthiness. And so I've always said trust is more important than performance after I saw that. And in my own experience, it's been true that you need those people on the team.
Yeah. So where have you seen that emerge in your career, and why has that been so important?
Well, I've seen some toxic leaders in the past get promoted and get bonused or get recognition. Oh, yeah.
We've all seen it.
Yeah. I think we see it a lot. And I think it affects the morale of the rest of the team that they're seeing bad behavior being rewarded. Someone's not living the operating principles, let's say, or someone isn't worth trustworthy. They're only thinking about themselves. Like, those are the ones that are getting rewarded. And so businesses really need to change the way that they're looking at performance overall. And I think it's pretty pretty rare that you see the underdog, kind of the one being promoted or the one moving up quickly in their career. But technically, as a member of the team, they're the ones that make the team better. So that's what we should be focused on.
Yeah, I can think of many cases when I worked in corporate where it seemed like the person with the perceived higher performance was rising right. the top, getting promoted. You see the org announcements come out and people's jaws drop. They're like, really? Yeah. Because their team has high turnover. They're miserable. They complain about that leader at happy hour. Maybe they're terrified of them. And maybe there's one or two that try to say, well, I'm just going to stick it out because I'm going to get promoted maybe if I ride with them. But the damage to the company exists. And I just think about this term individual contributor. I'm like, are there really any individual contributors? Because we all work with teams.
That's right.
And if you're great with trust and building trust and you're reliable, maybe that should be considered part of performance, not just.
I would 100% consider consistency and reliability as measures of performance. For me, those are two of the most important performance measures. But yeah, ultimately it leads to trust.
So this, my mind instantly goes to some of the research I was looking at with impact.com, which is by the way, I don't know how in the world someone gets that domain. That's an amazing domain.
I know. No, it was a bad
like one. impact.com. That's an amazing domain. Yeah. But there's a lot of, and you've written about and a lot of research, I guess, on influencers.
That's
right. Right. Which is a big part of that. And trust is big and performance is big. So how do you, taking it sort of out of the inner corporate organization and thinking about it, trust versus performance, so how do those work together in that space, in the influencer space?
It has to do with what they're looking for in the partnerships. If you ask brands, would you rather have someone who goes viral, occasionally, or would you rather have someone who consistently is going to meet your deadlines, provide quality work, but maybe not have that viral nature? I think most people would choose to work with someone who's reliable and consistent. Mm. So you see that trust, consumer trust, is really based on who the most authentic voice is nowadays. It's not about being picture perfect. It's not about having like a perfectly curated Instagram and always having like your airbrushed face on. It's about being real. Mm. And that's things that, everyone from Gen Z to millennials to boomers can appreciate, that this de-influencing movement that's occurring, these influencers who are showing up, real, raw, authentic, they're the ones who are really generating trust with the public. And I think what brands have to learn is that when they're putting out messages and when they're putting out advertisements, it's very hard for a consumer to trust that, because we can say whatever we want to as business, right? But when
it's it's a soulless, faceless brand name like Walmart. Well, you may shop there every week, and it's weird. You trust to buy stuff maybe at Walmart or one of the, who else is it? L'Oreal, Uber. I mean, who doesn't use Uber these days, right? All these. But it's still a corporate brand, and you're not still going to do what the corporate brand's telling you to do.
No, and that's where the opportunity lies for brands, though, is working with partners like influencers and your customer base, for that matter, to share the joy of working with your business or how much they enjoy your product or seeing your product in use. That's what consumers are looking for nowadays, because it is about authenticity. They don't want to buy a product without checking the reviews and making sure that other people who have bought the product aren't happy. That's what they're looking for. So that's why this whole partnership economy, as we call it at impact.com, is so important. It's because you need that third-party validation, or else you're just not going to break through to consumers anymore.
So the soul of the brand comes from the employees, but also the customers.
That's right.
And those specifically, I guess, those customers who are willing to speak passionately and advocate on your behalf.
Right. Yeah.
So if you're a leader, like what do leaders really need to know? Maybe they're not using influencer marketing. Where in the world would they start? I guess they should call impact.com, of course.
Well, I guess they should.
Someone serve a square one, and they're like, some CEO listening right now is saying, I've heard about these influencers. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, what? Well,
It's not just influencers. Influencers are the hot partnership that everyone's talking about right now, of course, because they did blow up during COVID, the pandemic. Everyone's at home. Everyone needs that social interaction. They're on their phones more. They're buying things. So I believe that's when influencers really started to show up a lot more in the media and headlines and things like that. But any partner can speak about your brand. It doesn't have to be a creator. And so what we do is we actually offer a marketplace. So a brand, a CEO could kind of come in and say, I don't have any existing partners, but I'm looking for this type of partner or that type of partner. I want to partner with another brand so we can do so co-branded stuff. Like think about the Barbie movie. That was all partnerships. They had pink pools in Vegas. Google had a partnership with them. They had partnerships with all major brands to come up with different, unique, one-of-a-kind pink items. So I think that people are starting to see that that's the new way of reaching consumers, but a lot of people don't know where to start. And that's exactly why we have a marketplace and people are able to find and discover new partners.
That's pretty cool. Making it easier for people to start because they know, hey, we have a marketing budget. We'd like to add the influencer piece and test that, but where in the world? And they might just go to their 13-year-old daughter and say, who are the biggest influencers? And they're like, well, these people, and they're nothing to do with your business.
Yeah. No,
that's so funny. Yeah, it's an interesting world. So, and I don't want to spend all our time on this because I want to get into your career more, but it's fascinating.
Yeah.
And for people to hear. So I noticed in a lot of the research I showed posted by you and some of your other leaders, there's a heavy focus on Instagram, TikTok, you know, from an influence standpoint, right. I didn't see a lot of LinkedIn on there.
Yeah.
And what's your, a lot of our listeners are big LinkedIners, part of that 70 million. What's your take on LinkedIn influencers?
Yeah. So B2B influencers is what I'm calling LinkedIn influencers. They're not always B2B, but there are quite a few B2B. And we've actually seen some of our clients, like HubSpot, for example, wanted to work with B2B influencers. So they were able to come onto the platform, find creators and influencers that really speak to B2B, and a lot of them are on LinkedIn. Now, prices vary for B2B influencers. It depends on if it's a post, is it when they're on stage? Everyone wants to be mentioned by thought leaders when they're on stage, of course. Are they writing materials about your business that, you know, is there a content piece of it? So there's all different ways to partner.
Love it. How about podcast?
Podcasting, yes.
Didn't see podcast broken out on your website. Is it sort of dovetailed under, you're assuming that's fueling social media, or how is that being seen?
I think maybe we need to do some research on podcasts. I don't know that we've done any.
I'll talk to you about that.
Yeah, we can interview you, Ben. How about that?
Well, it seems people, I talk about this a lot, but I believe it is one of the greatest ways to for influencers to get their message across, because it's long form and you're in their ear. But the key is you have to get them to listen. If they're listening, the conversion rate is zero because they didn't hear it. So, but once they listen, it's a higher recall medium.
Yeah.
At least what I hear.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is cool. I think listeners, so you give us a good starting point for influencers and leaders to go to check out Impact, know how that works. What are, like, before we get all this, what is maybe something coming down the road that leaders need to think about? So there's like the whole issue with artificial intelligence that seems to be testing trust dramatically with these scary deep fakes and whatnot that are coming out.
I know.
How are you thinking about that from a leadership standpoint?
So AI there's a lot of benefits to it. There's obviously a lot of privacy concerns. What you type into ChatGPT, for example, can be spit right back out. So companies know not to put confidential information in there because it's not a search engine, but people are treating it like it's one. We're leveraging AI in a couple different ways at Impact. So from a marketing perspective, we're using writing tools. We're training AI to write like certain thought leaders in our business so that we can write a draft, run it through AI and say, make it sound like Dave, our CEO, or make it sound like me, the CMO.
Yeah.
So that's been a time saver for us. Obviously, people are using it for ideas on headlines, ideas on SEO, even coding in the back end work on websites. Like, it's become incredibly essential to me in my career, in my job right now. we're also using AI to respond to inbounds. So we have programmed a bot that essentially acts as an SDR so that when people are reaching out for more information, it's an automated bot that's responding in some cases. So that's all driven by AI. We're using it in our platform so that people can look up, that we can issue recommendations based on their other partners. Okay, you're with partner A. Well, partner B looks a lot like partner A, so maybe you should be working with them also. So we think of it as a powerful tool. But of course, with any new technology, there's all sorts of risk around privacy and confidentiality and things like that. But I'm a big believer in and a big fan of AI in the way that we've adopted it. And I'm excited for the future to see what comes from it.
Do CEOs make great influencers?
The best CEOs do. The best CEOs do. I think generally CEOs don't have time to work on their social presence as much as they'd like, but when they have someone in the business who can help them, I see CEOs can drive a lot of views, visits, help people make a lot of decisions.
So speaking of influence and authenticity, you recently posted that motherhood has made you a better leader. So you're putting it out there. Tell me about that perspective.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that being a parent has taught me. And it's really helped me grow as a leader. I think I'm more empathetic. I understand feelings. I'm putting myself in others' shoes more frequently. You have to learn how to explain things. You have to stop what you're doing to answer the why. And that's been the biggest change in me, is that now I'm finding myself explaining the why I'm doing things. And it's been really helpful for teams, because maybe I can just kind of go through my list of things that we're doing without giving the full explanation. And so I think just those two alone, there's a million other things that I've learned as being a parent, but just those two alone have helped me.
Yeah, it's big. I mean, it's hard to, you can appreciate your team and your employees that have kids, and you can appreciate the fact that they're parents. But until you've gone down that road, it is sometimes hard to put yourself in their shoes from an empathetic standpoint.
I agree.
And I went through that similar evolution, I would say, once I became a parent. I'm like, oh yeah, we have a sick kid. That really does take the wind out of your sails. It's almost better for you to be sick as the parent.
That's right.
Keep going versus have a sick kid. It gets much harder.
I agree with that.
And God forbid if you're both sick. Yeah. Which does happen. God bless the stomach virus. That will change your life.
Yes.
What's the worst leadership advice you've heard?
I've had a lot of bad advice in my so it's hard to narrow it down to one. But I think the one that I know now, that it took me a long time to learn that this was bad advice. Early in my career, I was explaining something and I was getting defensive and I could hear my voice raise and I started talking really fast. And so my manager at the time, who was a man, shared with me that, you know, when I'm emotional, people stop listening and that I should talk slower and bring my voice down. Well, I started doing that and people stopped listening to me. And I learned later on that it is so important to be yourself at work. And when I'm passionate, it excites the team. When I'm disappointed in something, the team can understand how I feel. I think that there's no greater advice than to be yourself in business. You're differentiated, you're authentic, you're all the things that we just talked about. But trying to be somebody else or trying to change the way that you express yourself or the way, you know, that's tough and it's not always beneficial. So take that advice with a grain of salt. Any advice you've heard about how you present yourself or how you act at work, because naturally you want to be professional, but you also need to be yourself.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. Because there is an element of you want to communicate in a way that people are going to listen to you.
That's right.
And if you were yelling at them, sometimes they do listen to you, but over the long haul, they're like, oh, Ben's yelling again. I'm shutting him down. But if you're communicating enthusiasm or, you know, passion or focus or something like that, and that's how you do it, I think people appreciate it.
And I feel like sometimes women are passionate and they're called emotional instead. And so I think
Double standard. A man can communicate that way and they're like, oh yeah, he has a real strong passion and vision.
Cursing.
But then the woman exec is interpreted as, well, she's just, you know, going off or getting emotional or something like that.
That's right.
And that is not the way to roll.
Are you looking to increase sales, grow your brand, and share your leadership message? then check out our business podcast program. Each week, more people listen to podcasts that have Netflix accounts, and one-third of the U.S. population listens to podcasts regularly. So your customers and team are already listening to podcasts. It should be yours. Discover our 5-step profitable podcast framework and what results you can expect for your company by setting up a 20-minute call with my team at benleads.com/schedule. That's benleads.com/schedule. So since you stepped into that, what have you noticed?
Since I've stepped into the CMO role?
Well, I'm thinking you got that bad advice and it sounds like you were going with it for a while. You're like, okay, this person's maybe my manager. I'm going to take this advice. And you noticed, hey, that is not, it's not as effective. Went back to, hey, I'm Christy and I'm being Christy.
That's right.
What did you notice in the results?
People paid attention when I started being myself, when I started voicing my opinions. I felt like I gained respect. I actually think that communicating passion actually benefits your career, not the opposite. If you're always kind of even keel and laid back, people might question if you have a sense of urgency, if you're excited about the work that you're doing. I found that I got to know people better. People got to know me better. And I earned respect as a result.
Respect. That's a great benefit of being yourself.
Yes.
What advice would you give your younger self today?
That's a great question. I'd probably say no one has it figured out. I think when I was younger, I had a misconception that there would be the real world or when I became an adult or all of these things. And most adults I know still think they're kids. I didn't know that growing up. You know, I thought that there was kind of this age. And so I was in such a rush to grow up. I didn't really enjoy my childhood. I think every year I was the younger child. So I always wanted to catch up to where my sister was. And I thought when I got to a certain age, I would get this independence and this, you know, this knowledge. And it doesn't really happen that way. It's like every day is your real life and just enjoy it and try to do your best with what you have. But as a kid, knowing that not everyone has it together, and in fact, most people don't have it together, everyone's just trying to do the best that they can. I think that would have been really helpful for me. I'm a bit of a perfectionist. So growing up, I always thought I was doing things wrong or, you know, but it's very important to understand that now. And looking back, those are some regrets that I have. I wish I had slowed down a little bit.
Yeah, I think a lot of wisdom in that. And it does feel like even as professionals, and I get caught up in this, and one of my personal coaches, people are often surprised I have multiple I work with. It's like, he always says, to compare is to despair.
Yeah.
And if you're running your race, always looking to the side or you're, you know, always looking to the person ahead, it does steal the joy from the moment and a lot of the opportunities. And there are maybe some pluses because you're striving, you know, you're working hard, you know, you're getting some energy from that. But it does steal a lot of the joy out of the moment. And so just starting to run your own race. And so how many kids are in your family?
It was just me and my sister.
Too. Okay. All right. So you were the younger. Yeah. And you were seeing her like, man, I want to be a big kid.
Exactly.
And embracing the fact that even Simon and all these other great authors out there, even they don't have it figured out.
That's right.
You know, they're just working it out like we all are. Pretty comforting to think about.
Yeah.
So when an employee, and you probably get a lot of this, especially working for a company like Impact, when an employee has a big idea, what's your advice on how they should communicate their idea to the C-suite?
Yes. So after being a member of a C-suite, my perception of the C-suite has changed quite a bit. I used to think that I was bothering someone by nagging them or reminding them to do something. Mm-hmm. And now I am so grateful when people nag and remind me. But I would say, if you want to get your big idea across, you got to do it in a couple different ways. An example would be like hit them three ways. Like, first of all, no executive has time to read a long document. So write a very short brief about your idea. I would send it to them via email. I would send it to them via Slack if you use Slack or some other messaging app. And then I would schedule a meeting. And most people may ignore an email or may ignore Slack, but when they know that there's a meeting coming up, they may be curious about what that's about. So putting the information in the agenda is really important. But I would say a minimum of 3 touch points. And then you have to consider that there's probably going to need to be at least 4 reminders as as it goes on. So the magic number 7.
I love it. 7 touches. And it's a good reminder that just because no one responded the first time doesn't mean your idea is bad or worthless. It means people are busy and no one else understands this more than marketing. You're not going to put your proverbial advertisement or commercial in front of someone. They're going to remember it all the first time, right? It's got to be multiple points, hit it from different directions. It also makes me think to really think your idea through as much as possible, because you're going to be married to this idea for a while and from a communication standpoint.
That's right.
So think the thing through. What's a tool or gadget that has contributed to your success, and where can listeners go and check it out?
Yeah. So not an inexpensive tool, but a great tool that we're leveraging is called Sixth Sense. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but Sixth Sense it's really an intent data tool. It essentially shows you in-market accounts that you should be reaching out to, and you can purchase contacts via their database. You can even leverage the AI bot, like I talked about, to follow up with inbound leads. The tool has really changed how we operate, because we used to focus on the 95% that weren't in market, and you end up wasting a lot of your budget. You end up kind of spinning your wheels. It's in awareness, it's important, but focusing the dollars on the in-market accounts and being able to loop in your sales team to be able to say, okay, this person is on our website right now, and they've been searching for our keyword terms, or they've been comparing us to competitors. That's insight that is super valuable. Our sales team has adopted this tool, and they're starting to see these wins come through just because of how quickly they can reach out when it's top of mind. So I can't recommend that tool enough. We've only scratched the surface of it, but we saw value.
Cool.
Yeah.
So walk me through that. So when you say in-market accounts, those are ones that are what?
They're searching for you. They're searching for your competitors. They're searching websites, keywords. They're on G2. It basically has, you know, analytics on the web for people searching for certain things.
Yeah, we've had Godard Abel, who's the CEO of G2.
Yeah, G2 is a great platform.
Yeah, and that's a big trust platform, right? That's where people go to evaluate different tools and whatnot. So they go and so people come to your website or go to a website, you can see what they're doing because you can track based on the magic behind the internet.
That's right. That's right. And it's important for us because we have key accounts that we're targeting. Mm-hmm. So when somebody is in market and they happen to be a high value account, there's an alert that's generated immediately to the salesperson to reach out. So it's a great tool.
Yeah. Timing is everything.
It is everything.
And so they're looking for your stuff. They're out there.
Yep.
And then you want someone to reach out. Yeah. And you can proactively reach out by email, phone, whatever's available.
Whatever's available.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. The magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on one hand, that's really exciting. On the other hand, it's a little terrifying.
It's a little terrifying.
But from a B2B perspective, it could make your life easier.
It certainly can.
Theoretically.
It can. And it should. That's what you're paying for.
That's the idea. Yeah. The Sixth Sense is also a movie about a kid who sees dead people. And I won't ruin it for you. You haven't seen it. But wow.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? Have you seen The Sixth Sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. With Bruce Willis. Yeah. It's a good one.
That moment with the doorknob. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my gosh. I got a chill thinking about The Sixth Sense. We will not put that in the show notes, but okay. Bruce Willis. So, Christy, it's been a really fun time today. What's your parting thought or tip for our listeners today?
Well, I have three tips.
Be yourself. Even better.
Yeah.
Give us the three.
Work hard. Hard work always pays off. Be yourself. There's nobody like you. And embrace failure. It's part of the human connection. It makes you more resilient. It makes you have better ideas. You can try again. It's really important to be able to stand back up after you fall down. So those are my three tips.
Great. Thank you so much, Christy. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much, Ben. Appreciate it.
Would you or your CEO be a good fit for this podcast? If you know a uniquely talented leader who has a story to share and a message to deliver, then we'd love to host them on the show. Go to benleads.com/apply to fill out a quick form where you can let us know a little bit about yourself, and my team will take a look to see if we're a good fit. That's benleads.com/apply.
Ben Fanning is a number one best-selling author, Inc. magazine columnist, and CEO of The Fanning Group, an international consultancy and corporate training company. To learn how they can help your organization, go to benfanning.com.